Welcome to Career Crossroads, a podcast about career pivots and the people who make them. I'm your host, Jonathan Colleton, and if you're struggling with a career decision or work with people who need help making career decisions, I'm glad you're here. This is episode number 99 of the podcast, and true story, I did try to get the most famous number 99 ever, Wayne Gretzky, for this episode. Obviously, that did not happen, but I have a wonderful substitute for you. Betty Shea is a career coach who specializes in people who work in the creative field. As you'll hear, that specialization came from her own experience working in the film and nonprofit sector. If that sounds interesting, keep listening. I am joined by another and very unique career coach on today's episode, Betty Shea. Welcome to Career Crossroads. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Jonathan, for having me here. I'm a fan of your podcast, so it's really great to be here.
Yeah, it is always so flattering to get an email from someone saying, hey, I listen to your podcast, and I listen to this episode, and I do this type of stuff, and like, can I come on and we can talk about this? Love that. That's great. So happy that we were able to connect. So Betty, as I mentioned, I kind of hinted already, your career story is a little bit different in that the kind of career coaching that you do is kind of niche compared to some of the other people that I've spoken to, which is why I think you become a great candidate for an interview like this. But of course, to understand why you're coaching the kind of group that you are coaching, we've got to talk about your own career journey a little bit. So let's go back in time and tell me about the first ever career that you thought you wanted.
So the first ever career I thought I wanted was actually doing math. Okay. I got into the math program in University of Waterloo. And it was between that and business program at U of T. Then what actually happened was like I had a moment of reckoning with myself and said, like, you know, I always would love writing. I came from an artistic family. I always like love painting. There was so much about the arts that I love. And before I accepted any admission letter, I actually wrote to the U of T and said, can I transfer from the business school to humanities? And even I remember getting a reply that the person hinted, like, are you sure? And at the time, no idea that having a career in the arts is relatively tough.
Yeah.
So and that's fun story.
Very unique for people, I think, to kind of between that point in time, like between the application and acceptance process, and then you kind of finally making that decision, already deciding you want to change your mind and to such a drastic shift too. Was that something that like you just kind of came to that realization on your own? Did you have outside pressures or influences that helped you come to that realization?
It was more like my own pressure for myself more than anything. I immigrated to this country, to Canada, with my family in my teenage. And I always thought like, you know, my family didn't immigrate here for me to have a tough future. Mm-hmm. So I was always good at math in school. And I thought, oh, maybe I can do something with that. Or I could do something business so that I can have like one of those more quote-unquote stable career. But as I was choosing the university, like even flipping through the courses, it became so clear to me that I was so interested in the arts. At the time, I didn't know that. I eventually went to cinema studies, but I didn't know that would be it. I was just generally interested in the arts. And I thought, like what's a better way to study it and explore that?
Okay, so knowing that you were very broadly interested in the arts, when you made that switch and then you accepted your position at the university, how did you kind of narrow down on what area of the arts specifically that you really wanted to study? Because it sounds like you were just broadly like, this is an area of interest. And I know that for a lot of people, that kind of first year of studies is very exploratory. You take a lot of different courses. Did something like that happen to you? You took one and it just felt like the right path?
Yeah, so something very similar happened. And what I ended up choosing was cinema studies and contemporary Asian studies. One is in the social science and one is in the humanities. And I thought after doing the exploration work that you mentioned, that makes sense for me, that as a combination. Because for a while, I was just taking like humanities course for one semester and that felt very silo. Mm. So I chose that combination to reflect my interest, but also my background and my interest in the region of Asia.
Now, when you were realizing that this was very much an interest of yours, were you at the stage where you already thought about what you might be able to do if that was a topic that you studied? Because, you know, what you said before about like your parents came here for you to be to have a very successful career. And so I imagine that you had put some thought into what this specific program would lead to, as opposed to just, I'm going to study this because I'm interested. Is that right?
It's funny because like I look back on my university years, I just had no idea. I don't know why I never like look up like what's the art, how much arts I mean make,
right?
And meanwhile, I had like peers and like friends in the contemporary Asian studies who were studying like political science or who want to go on become a lawyer. And I think there was like even one moment graduating from school where they were like, one friend of mine, so is going to become a consultant in one of the big four. And I said, like, how much do they make? And the number they gave me shocked me, because at the time I was accepting another arts admin job that was like 1/4 of that amount. And I was like, what have I done? So very much there was a period of time that I really followed my interests.
Okay. So as you're wrapping up school, are you starting to really get a sense of what direction that you think your job is or your career path might head? Like now that you're getting all this various education, do you have specific careers in mind, or are you looking more broadly still kind of at the film industry or contemporary Asian studies? Like where is your head at as you're approaching graduation?
Yeah, so during school, I very much wanted to transition to continue to grad school and become a film academic at one point.
Okay. Then
in the second and third year of school, I got a chance to dabble in filmmaking, starting in documentaries. And what I realized that I was very much still someone that, even though I love school, I love like the doing of it. I didn't love the idea of like being a film critic or academic was like two or three steps behind the filmmakers. So I loved making the documentary projects I got involved in school, and attended a workshop provided by a local film festival called Real Asian Film Festival, and was able to then go on to my second film project. So when I graduated from school, I very much thought I would become a filmmaker, but I was also quickly hit with the realization that as an independent filmmaker, you can't pay your bills, at least not in the initial phase. So I got myself, like started working in film festivals, got an internship at TIFF. So slowly, snowball from there, I had both an arts administration career going on and a filmmaking career going on.
Okay. Was that something you just kind of worked in parallel while you grew both of them and figured at a certain point you might have to make the choice to kind of go full force into one or the other?
I had very much had it for on parallel, I would say, even up to 5-6 years ago.
Okay.
And if you talk to other like kind of emerging like creator or creatives, I feel like I bump into them all the time now in my practice. And that's very much a reality. And no one really told us that in school. And that's partially why like I'm putting out like work there that want to like tell people kind of that how to be prepared to have a kind of what I call like horizontal career, that you have multiple links coexisting so that you can develop a thriving practice and also a pragmatic and realistic practice to sustain yourself.
Yeah, I've exactly what you're describing. I heard described as parallel paths one time, and that's what I always talk about with people. That, you know, if you're working on two things, then at some point, if one of them really kind of takes off, or let's say it doesn't take off, then you've always got the other thing to fall back on. So respect that mindset, and that's very much how I feel. I've kind of tried to do things myself, particularly over the last, say, 4 years or so, or 3 years maybe. So let's talk about then grad school. You moved on to grad school, master's in design thinking, strategic innovation, and foresight. I think I know someone who took that exact program, and it's just as confusing to read it out loud now than when I took the program.
Absolutely.
So tell me what that program was actually like.
Mm-hmm. So when I was looking for grad school, by that point, I had worked like 6 or 7 years. I don't remember. And I was experiencing burnout from that parallel paths. I was doing everything everywhere all at once. And I very much thought, this is it. I'm going to quit the arts. But I want to use my skills that I've developed in arts management and organization management. Because by that point, I have worked quite a bit as a fundraiser, as an arts manager. And how do I further develop that? I didn't want to go into MBA. I wanted a new way of thinking about like system change, organizational change, and just change management in general. So I brought me to this program at OCAD University. And if you, like you mentioned, you know someone from there, I think like everybody in that program is a unicorn.
Ah, yes.
Very much from all walks of life. Most of us have a professional career. It's a professional program. And that makes it all that more fascinating. And all the alums coming out from there, I would say, including myself, learn a set of tools, including design thinking, strategic innovation, and foresight to help us become better problem solver, not necessarily pigeonhole in one field or one job description.
Now, I know it was during this program where you really came into the idea of coaching for the first time, or at least realized that it was something that you might really enjoy. So tell me about what that process was like. Was there a specific, you know, moment, or kind of what was the tipping point where you realized that might be for you?
So as I said, like when I went into the program, I thought like, this is it, quitting the arts. But what I realized, and like a lot of people when they like go for a career transition, they realize like you can't really completely reinvent yourself. You can reinvent like your job title or go to a different path. But the things that you're interested in, they don't really like, some of them really don't change. And I can't change the aspect of myself that I love the arts. And I realized that during the program, and I realized that as much as I'm learning all this change management stuff for organization's sake, I am at my best when I'm supporting individuals. So how can I apply those framework and thinking to support other individuals to make the changes that they want? That was kind of the impetus of that thought. Alongside with that, of course, the pandemic happened. Mm-hmm. The pandemic just happened at the tail end of my grad school journey. So at the time, I was working, I was kind of put in a phase where I was like, well, no one is making film for a while. I'm in a very good like boutique consultancy firm for fundraising for nonprofits. And my firm sent me to professional development and I picked coaching because something there about helping individuals really intrigued me. And at that coaching course, I was really, really enjoying it. I find that lots of principles about coaching is connected to storytelling. And I'm a storyteller. So there was a lot of thoughts that got connected. Then I look around and realize everybody there was like either HR professional or they were going to go on and serve internally at a corporate corporation. And I was like, wait a moment, this stuff can really benefit individual artists and creators. So that again gave me a further idea about founding my own practice to serve independent creatives or arts professionals.
Okay, so that's a pretty specific group of clients that you're kind of, or at least to me, it seems like a pretty specific group of clients, right? So tell me about what your typical clients are like, because when I hear your background and I hear that kind of niche, I'm picturing like people who worked in the film industry or people who, frankly, that's where my head goes to first. So how off am I, or, you know, where else do your clients come from?
So my clients, they practice all kinds of disciplines that are related to the creative field. And sometimes I have, they're not necessarily like your typical artists, meaning like they don't necessarily need to practice one of those artistic disciplines as we recognize. I always say that I have to broad this definition of being a creative, which is as long as you have a serious commitment to your craft, that you apply creativity to your work, then I'm happy to talk to you about coaching.
Okay.
And so as I mentioned at the beginning, I listened to your podcast. So in conversation with other coaches, I often find fascinated, like there are a couple of coaches that mentioned they work with youths, they work with people that are coming out from university. And I was like, wow, that's like, that's actually one bit that like piece that I've never coached people at that spot. So I rarely coach people who are just a new grad. My clients are most often like people who have worked a bit and they're now at a place where they gain some success, but for some reason, it's feeling like they're in a bottleneck, either in a arts management or arts professional job that they're looking for a pivot, or they're running a freelancing or creative business and that they feel that the business itself is not serving them anymore and need to make a shift. So those two types of clients within that broad definition of creators are often my clients, and they practice everything from filmmaking, photography, everything you name it.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of those things where I have put a specific kind of shackle on the word creative and what my interpretation of it means. But of course, it's going to be different for different people. And it's actually funny that I put that shackle on it, because I think that over the kind of 3 years or so that I've been doing this podcast, I've realized that I am a much more creative person than I thought maybe I was, or than I let myself be for a long time. So I totally understand how, you know, a variety of people can sort of see that in the work that they do, and then that they come to you for support in figuring out how to get past that bottleneck, as you said. So let's talk about some of these challenges that they face. You mentioned a bottleneck. So when we're talking about a bottleneck or the other types of challenges, you know, give me a more detailed picture of, without, of course, you know, giving away anybody's specific career problems they've had you work through, but like, how do you, you know, practically help them through these challenges? What are the types of things that they are specifically saying they are struggling with?
Mm-hmm. So I'll give one example for if people are in a job setting, and then one example for if they're like in self-employed setting.
Sure.
So when people come to me, if they are stuck in a job, often is at that phase where they intellectually know they need to move on from this position. And sometimes, I think we need to have more conversation about this, but it's people who are looking to leave the arts. They don't want to stay in the arts anymore because for whatever reason, it's not sustainable.
Mm.
And there's a disconnect between what they know that they should do and what emotionally and somatically allow them to do. And so my job there is really help them to figure out that clarity that they need so that they can move towards action. And a lot of times I would say the first part of that journey is actually figuring out what's holding them back to not give themselves that permission. For those of us who work in the arts or in general, like those of us who are very committed to our world, we have a lot of attachment to our job identity. And often in the arts, we also, there's a lot of feeling that we attach to, like we're doing this for the good, we're doing this for artistic importance, we're serving artists. So untangling some of that so that we can get the clarity, like the clients can get the clarity they need, and them articulate what's actually the next role that would serve them is a huge part of the game. So I've supported clients to actually make that transition and then find their next role. Yeah.
That is funny that you, you know, as you're saying that, I'm thinking about many of my own family, my dad, for example, who's an insurance broker. But if I was describing my dad to someone, I wouldn't say, oh, he's an insurance broker. I would probably talk about the person that he is. Whereas I feel like perhaps just what I've seen in you know, movies and TV and books, if someone's a painter, they just get described as a painter. It's like their whole personality. It's how often people would define them. So I see what you're saying, that if you realize that I don't want to be a painter, how do you disconnect from that if that is not just your career, but your entire identity and how other people sort of define you and how maybe you define yourself? But, you know, you can realize that like you are more than just a painter. And how do you decide what you want to maybe do next? You need some support for something like that. And that's where you come in. So I see that that's a perfect fit. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you said that beautifully there, like that our identity get attached to our artistic label. And you know, to connect that points earlier that you make about parallel paths, now our identity gets much more multifaceted. But sometimes we just still get pigeonholed into mm-hmm. one label. I'm a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that is not just for other people, it's our mind. We see ourselves as that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of work that goes into that when someone's making a transition, especially if they're mid-career or advancing their career.
Mm-hmm. So I think you were given two examples and I interrupted you in the middle. So give us the second example.
Yeah. The second example is people who essentially, I would say, they wanted to, or they move on to working for themselves. So people who are freelancers, like lots of people are in that boat, like filmmakers, like cinematographer is a freelancer, photographer, or just a creative business owner. That originally they wanted this setup of self-employment so that they can get the flexibility and freedom that we all normally associate with that setup of career. But as they work and actually gain traction, ironically, that practice becomes just another toxic job because they're working all the time. And they feel this scarcity mindset around if they don't work all the time, then they might not be in demand. They need a bit more structure than being just a freelancer, like a little, actually a bit more business structure that will allow them to be a successful business owner, at the same time still be the artist they always wanted to be, meaning having space to create and play. So that's where I support them and coming in and support them to craft and design their vision and the strategies and the mindset they need to put in that flexible structure.
Okay. So those are the things that people come to you and generally they need support with. Do you find that there are things when people come to you, they are just, they don't always know what they need help with. They just know they need some kind of support. And then you're very much able to identify something that is holding them back that they aren't able to identify on their own?
Absolutely. Like you nail it on the head there. This is why my first call with the clients, there's a free consultation that I offer for 60 minutes, because often when we articulate our goals on our own, we are like kind of touching the surface, and like in a lengthy, like in 1 hour call, maybe sometimes even a little bit longer, we're able to uncover something that's okay, what is the why behind that why that you're telling me? So, and even them, in the coaching process, I always tell people that like it's really kind of like a semi-structured process, because we need to be there to receive or actually emerge in the process. Because sometimes we think that we are going from A to B, but for any coaches, they know that like off from A to B, there's actually so many like detours, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's actually going to C. Yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely something that I've sort of come across in all these conversations I've done with people, that you think you're going one way and it turns out like that's a false start and you really need to be going somewhere else. And you know, maybe if you had tried to unpack some of that earlier, not that the choice you made was a bad choice, but you can get clarity a little earlier on if you just sort of like talk through things a little bit with somebody else, because I don't think people talk about this. I mean, that's why I've done like, I think you're going to be episode 101, somewhere in that range. So I've done 100 plus episodes by the time this comes out, or actually maybe you're 99, my mistake. So, point being, somewhere in that range, that's a lot of conversations with people who didn't know where they were going at some point, right? And that's why they're coming here, they're talking to me, that's why creatives come and talk to you to get some support with figuring out their path, because sometimes it either takes you a while to figure it out on your own, or you can maybe jumpstart that process by talking to a coach who can kind of guide you through something that they see on a regular basis that you're seeing maybe for the very first time. I imagine a lot of the people coming to you, they've never had a coach before, right? This is like their first foray into it when they realize like, maybe I need something here.
Yeah, I would say 90% of my clients never worked with a coach before. And so I also see it as part of my role to like kind of guide them what that coaching process is like,
mm-hmm.
because this coaching is really came from more of like an organizational setting.
Okay. Well, if people want to see what it is like to have a coach, particularly the creatives who might be listening, who maybe need some support, maybe need a little bit of help navigating their realization that they maybe want to shift up what they're doing, where are the various places online that they can find you and connect with you?
So I'm on LinkedIn and Instagram all the time.
Perfect.
So if you search my name, Betty Xie or Betty X Coach, you'll find me. I also run a podcast called the Everyday Talent Podcast, where I interview other creatives and share some insights on creative career. You can find that on my social media. Also, I have a free resource for anybody to take, which is a quiz to identify your creative career archetype, which encompasses some of the things that we talk about on this podcast in terms of, are you someone who co-hold parallel universes? Or are you someone who is super focused and run your own solar system? So it's a fun creative resource with some prompting questions to support you.
Oh, I might have to go do that quiz myself now. I saw the link to it, but I didn't. Now that I hear you say that, I'm going to have to go check it out. So I have all the links to those things you've just mentioned, of course. So if you're listening, scroll down, scroll over, depending on your app of choice, and you'll be able to click on those links. It'll bring you right to all of Betty's different pages that she just mentioned. Betty, thank you for coming on here and talking about all of this, the work that you do, how you support creatives, because I think that's maybe people like me, because as I said, you know, I didn't used to think of myself as a creative and now I do. And so if there's anybody out there who listens to this ever and thinks, you know, I want to do something like that, how do I do something like that? Or I am doing something like that, and maybe I don't want to do something like that anymore. I feel like, Betty, you might be the right person for them to talk to.
Thank you, Jonathan. I definitely resonate with you. The definition of creatives is broadening. So thank you so much for having me on this podcast.
Well, that was my conversation with Betty, a career coach for all you creatives out there. I think it was a pretty thorough conversation, so I don't really have anything to add to it today. If something stood out to you about our conversation, reach out and let me know at the contact page on careercrossroads.ca or at any of the podcast social media accounts. That's all for this week's episode of Career Crossroads. If you know someone who would benefit from hearing about Betty's career path, please share this episode with them. And if you want to hear more interviews like this, go to careercrossroads.ca or follow the podcast on your favorite podcast player of choice.